What has made it suddenly possible to be able to consider actually being able to produce perennial crops?
Well, it's always been possible to produce perennial crops, and we have many wonderful examples of perennial crops. Apples, for example. Apple trees are perennials, woody perennials. Perennial grains. Right. What makes the development of perennial grains possible now, and perhaps for the first time in human history, some of the plant breeding techniques developed over, the past 30 years, such as rescuing embryos when the plant breeders make wide crosses between, say, an annual grain crop and a wild perennial relative, sometimes that initial offspring cannot develop normally. So our plant breeders will go in, rescue the embryo, grow it out. Then you can cross that rescued plant, essentially, back cross it to one of the other parents, and then you get a viable offspring that you can actually grow out and select and use in your breeding program. So some of those techniques weren't available earlier. Some of the work in cytogenetics, in which cytogeneticists are able to look at the contributions of each one of the parents in the offspring so that we can get a much clearer handle on what the offspring contains in terms of the components of its parents. And of course, that gets quite technical, but that's one of the things that humans are good at, is progressing on those technological fronts. What humans are terrible at, and this is where we get to the necessity of developing these green crops, so we're terrible micromanagers of very complex processes that are taking place on large landscapes. Our response time as humans is very slow in the matter on the scale of, say, hours or weeks and months in terms of responding to environmental conditions. And on the scale of, hundreds of hectares or thousands of hectares. Whereas these perennials respond on the scale of minutes and millimeters, and very responsive. And so we're at a very unique juncture in human history where it is now necessary to do this to meet the demands of a growing human population and to save the planet. And it's also possible now due to some of the technological innovations that have occurred in plant breeding and cytogenetics.
You were talking earlier today about some of the hidden costs of conventional agriculture.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about the so-called hidden costs of conventional agriculture. But those are pretty much no longer hidden. We haven't necessarily quantified those costs in terms of dollar value, but the recently released United Nations-sponsored Millennium Ecosystem Assessment Report, this was essentially a State of the Planet report, gave agriculture a flunking grade. One of the conclusions of the study was that agriculture is the number one problem in terms of environmental problems of the planet. It's the greatest threat to biodiversity and ecosystem function of any single human activity. So some of the costs that we could just run through a laundry list almost. Now there have been some 150 dead zones mapped out around the world. These are areas primarily along coastal waters where nutrient contamination from runoff, primarily from agricultural areas, has resulted in low oxygen concentrations. And so we essentially have large areas of coastal waters devoid of typical marine organisms for extended periods. Pesticide contamination in the U.S., for example, some 10,000 people screened by the Center for Disease Control for pesticides and pesticide metabolites. Every single one of them contained these compounds. And the, of course, the 8 to 10,000 year old problem of soil erosion and soil degradation due to agriculture is still with us and has increased dramatically globally in the last 40 years. So it's just tremendous the impact that the humans have had in converting diverse perennial plant communities that, that were characteristic of our natural ecosystems, converting those to our very different annual monocultures of grain crops globally. And, you know, we are focused, I mean, I'm focusing on annual grain crops because that's where most of the environmental impacts that, that we see from agriculture. It's that's 64% of global cropland that's in annual grain crops. And, you know, the dilemma that we face as a species is that some 70 to 80% of human caloric needs are met by these grain crops. Wheat, corn, and rice, for example, I don't know, some 90% of humans on a daily basis eat one of those three crops. And it's literally the backbone of our current population. So if we don't get a handle on that issue, namely annual grain crops within the next 25 to 50 years, I think we're going to be in for some very rough times. Things could be, I'm not necessarily talking about, you know, extinction of the species, but, you know, what kind of a world do we want to live in? It could be much better, much, much better, a much better planet with a lot healthier and happier people if we make this great transition to perennial grain crops in which components of diversity are well integrated.
Well, I think, you know, the big challenge is we have to work with the degraded land and yet produce more agricultural output than our pre-industrial forebears with less inherited knowledge and back down to similar energy levels. What we have in our advantage is that the kind of knowledge that has been built up through science and these techniques, and I think what you're talking about is one of the, that this is an example of the promise.
Right. I'm a little bit cautious about that. I'm not, I guess, I'm always very cautious about saying that it's technological solutions that will see us through. Essentially what the Land Institute is banking on and what we look to most thoroughly and for greatest promise is the great elegant solutions that natural ecosystems have worked out over millions of years. So really our fundamental basis for going forward and using the technological progress is our understanding of ecology and evolutionary biology. So in that situation, we don't see technology as we see it as a tool, and really the great transition conceptually to looking to natural ecosystems and what the planet did prior to agriculture as really the great conceptual leap.
So looking towards as a benchmark, not comparing, you know, how far organic has come away from conventional agriculture, how much it's improved, but looking towards natural ecosystems as a benchmark.
Right. I think that I guess one way to put it is that looking to conventional agriculture strictly is a great danger because we have to do so much better. We can brand our efforts a success if we do just a little bit better than conventional, but that is not ultimately necessarily the benchmark for sustainability. Sure, you're doing a little bit better, maybe you're buying a little bit of time, but in terms of ultimate sustainability of the human species and what they eat, namely grain crops, we need a different standard than conventional industrial agriculture. We need a different standard than traditional agriculture. We need a different standard for agriculture than what's been used for 8,000 to 10,000 years. We need a new standard for agriculture, and that is natural ecosystems that have proven sustainable for millions of years and have, you know, they recycle nutrients, they filter filter water, conserve soil, and run on contemporary sunlight. That's a model that is, it's a high bar to achieve, and I doubt that humans will ever achieve it fully in agricultural systems, but at least that's what we need to shoot for.
Brilliant. That's the end of the beer, and that was
okay. Good timing, huh?